This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 9th of December 2014 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Section D, the hour we devote to the world of design, each week here on Monocle 24. I'm your host, Tom Morris. On the show this week, we head to Florida, to what is fast becoming a prime world centre for the design industry to meet. Design Miami brings together the very best from designers, manufacturers and retailers from the Americas and beyond. This week, we'll soak up the sights and the sounds of the design world's must-see jamboree. We speak to the fair's new director.
Because of the influence of both Art Basel and Design Miami, it increasingly becomes like an architecture city, a design city. It's more and more important every day.
We'll meet some architects who brought a touch of Seattle to the Sunshine State.
In order to really understand design at its root, you have to understand both extremes, and the way those two extremes kind of come together is the most exciting point.
And as the gateway to Latin America, we'll of course check out some of the very best in Brazilian contemporary furnishings in Miami.
Although the pieces are in wood and sometimes in metal, show a little bit the warmth of Brazil and how our culture lives.
That's all here on this Miami Section D with me, Tom Morris, on Monocle 24. Exactly a decade ago, Design Miami was launched to stimulate an international design dialogue. A dialogue between contemporary art and design, Art Basel Miami Beach had started a few years earlier, and a commercial dialogue between continents, with Miami profiting from its location at the natural meeting point of the Americas. Basking in the glow of Art Basel Miami Beach and the Florida sunshine, this was a setting that has led to so many conducive creative and commercial interactions. A decade on, Design Miami has a new director to keep that conversation relevant. Monocle's Gillian Tobias pulled up a chair at the fair to speak with Rodman Premack about his ambitions for this year and beyond.
As the boundaries between art and design get ever more blurred, especially with one of the biggest art fairs in the world on your doorstep, having a clear vision is important for a contemporary design fair. Design Miami focuses on collectible design, appreciating heritage, encouraging emerging talent, and celebrating experimentation.
I think that collectible design as a market is a market for vintage and rare things. And in terms of contemporary things, it's things that are made in very small editions or made by hand or are studio projects. So there can be a chair that is in production, that's manufactured, that to me is not collectible design, but the prototype for that chair or the numerous iterations of that design before it went into production, that's collectible design. I think it's interesting to see that I think collectors are beginning to collect both vintage and contemporary, whereas a few years ago, I think there were people that were very focused on contemporary or very focused on vintage. And I think it's a taste thing as much as an education thing that people are beginning to realize, like, oh, I can do both, and actually both works together and looks great together, and I'd like to do both. And that makes me really happy. I'd like to see people collecting across and not just saying, oh, I only collect mid-century Italian or I only collect Scandinavian. I like seeing, and I think people are becoming more fluid in their collecting habits.
Formerly chairman of Phillips Dupuy Auction House in London, director of the Gagosian Gallery in LA, and Latin American art specialist for Christie's, Rodman Premack brings valuable market awareness to his new role as director of Design Miami.
I came from and have been working in this world from a moment when there wasn't really a consolidated market to today, when the market does feel very much consolidated between the auction houses and the fair. You really actually see a market. It's not us trying to create a market or to give the impression that there's a market. The auction houses, I think, are having really solid year after year sales of this material. The galleries and the fairs are having very solid fairs year after year. And it's not about the prices going up, 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 up. There was a moment where I think there was some speculation in the market and people were thinking that an indicator of success in the market was like, oh, I bought this chair 5 years ago and today it's worth 50 times as much. And I think people are beginning to realize that that's actually not how we want the market to go, that we would like the market to be a much more natural progression and for the market to hold value and not have these kind of spikes. And I think that you're seeing that. I think if we look back at the numbers, it's not like a Prouvé chair today is 50% more expensive than it was a year ago. It's maybe 1% or 2% more expensive than it was that year. And that to me feels much more natural and real.
10 years ago, Design Miami launched with 16 inaugural galleries. This year, there were 36, including a new timer from Beirut. Representation from France was as strong as ever, but noticeable this year was an increased American presence.
America has had these really incredible moments, design moments, and then we kind of lose it. Like in history, there's like a blip of really fantastic design, and then it kind of peters away, and then it comes back. But in general, as a culture, I don't think we're a design-driven culture, but I think that we're beginning to become more of a design-driven culture. I think as we learn to consume more responsibly, we're beginning to learn that design and better design helps us actually live better. Many other cultures around us have been showing that we can actually live better lives by making better design choices. And I think America's finally waking up to that fact, that it's not just about the kind of basic American ideas like more for less. And I think we're beginning to learn that actually we could have less and have it be more. And I think we see that with really good American design that hopefully will translate even farther into like mass-produced American design that's very good.
Going forward, Rodman would like to see galleries traveling to Miami from Japan, which so far has been lacking. But he welcomed how galleries were including architecture into this year's design conversation.
Architecture and design are united, really. This platform of collectible design has always been much more about furniture, but I think that the languages are together in a way. And although we're not, you know, selling buildings here or actually exploring architecture as the main point of the fair, I don't think you can look at design without also looking at architecture and also looking at how those languages talk to each other and in some cases don't talk to each other. But I think it's important to have sort of a cross-pollinization there, and we're really pushing it. Miami itself is a place of kind of fantasy. These American cities like LA and Miami, they've been created out of nothing, and there's an incredible history of modern and contemporary architecture in this city because it's a new city. It's a city that's been created. And because of the influence of both Art Basel and Design Miami, it increasingly becomes like an architecture city, a design city. It's more and more important every day that people make projects that are done with design and architecture, not just like, oh, we need to get the square footage, we need to get as many windows on the water. Today, you have to really think about the architect, you have to think about a master planner, you have to think about an incredible landscape designer and interior designer. So it's a really fun place to be doing it because it's being built right now.
That was Rodman Premack, Director of Design Miami, speaking with Gillian DeBias. And stay tuned for Monocle Film Reportage on Design Miami 2014, premiering later this week on monocle.com. You're listening to Section D with me, Tom Morris, where all show we are bringing you some of the highlights of Design Miami. Now, of all the design fairs, Miami must have the reputation as the most coveted of work trips. The climate, the parties, and the atmosphere. Now, the stakes are even higher on the hotel front at Miami. Just a few weeks into its opening, the Miami Beach Edition Hotel quickly became the hot ticket during this year's Design Miami festivities. Set in the former 1955 Seville Hotel, this is interior designer Ian Schrager's return to South Beach after launching the famous Delano Hotel 20 years ago. Ben Pudol, the VP of Guest Experience for the Edition, took Monocle on a tour of the elegant spaces on the entry level and down to the basement for a peek at the bowling alley and the ice rink.
This building was built in 1955 and we were obligated to keep the original bones and the layout of the entire ground floor. So you walk into this vast lobby and you get the same feeling, hopefully today, as you would have done in 1955 of kind of mid-century Miami glam, and the idea was to kind of really bring that back. So the Historic Preservation Board of Miami, rightly so, protects a lot of the Deco district and beyond, and we fall under that. So it kind of already gave us a canvas to work with. So as far as the experience is concerned, whether it's the music, the plants, or the cocktails even, we try to enhance that experience that we thought you may have got in the 50s, that kind of very glamorous time when the Rat Pack would come and hang out in Miami. Everything is off the lobby. So the lobby really is the centerpiece for the hotel, which it should be. We want you to feel like you're in Miami. There's nothing we want to shy away from. This is 50s Miami glam. We serve mojitos and champagne cocktails and punches and everything that when the wheels touch the runway and you're in Miami, that's what you want. Along with Jabel Puschelberg designing the hotel, Ian Schrager's team are so good at localizing projects, whether it's with the design or the experience. So we really want people to feel like they're in Miami. This property's on a lot of ground, but each area is really designed to feel intimate. So you can have multiple experiences. You can visit multiple times and never have the same experience. The Matador, the ground floor, is laid out as it was in 1955. So we have the Matador Bar, Matador Room, and Matador Terrace. Their hotel, as you've probably seen on the front, was originally called the Seville. So we kind of kept that Spanish, that Latin theme running through the hotel. I've spent a lot of time in Miami. I lived here full-time 10 years ago for 3 years. And Miami has just become and is becoming a much more global city. So I think to try and curate spaces that accommodate that global attitude, you know, the time is right. You enter into the conical basement and you have multiple entertainment experiences. So if we go to the right, we've got the bowling lanes and the ice skating rink, and then to the left, the nightclub. Yeah. Ian's genius. You know, we really wanted to make sure that entertainment-wise, again, that there was so much going on that if you didn't like a nightclub, you could hang out in bowling, and then the ice skating, that whole kind of contrast between Miami heat and ice. And we're trying to create authentic spaces, whether it's with food and beverage or entertainment. We're very conscious of that, of it not being too themey and never using the word, you know, or thinking about it being trendy or anything like that. We want it to be here for a long time, for people to enjoy it for a long time, so nothing too faddish. We kind of revisited the idea of vignettes. So Ian, during his Studio 54 days, used to have vignettes, whether it's sword swallowers or magicians or contortionists or what have you. And so Ian, who historically doesn't really open up a lot about Studio 54, we had a great chat about how we could bring the place alive. It's a new Miami, I think. It's become a more sophisticated city.
That was Monocle's Megan Billings getting that whistle-stop tour of the new Miami Beach Edition Hotel. You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Morris, where we'll return to this Design Miami special after this short break.
If you're after a soundtrack to your working day, look no further than Monocle 24's Globally Minded playlist. We play the very best upbeat music from around the world, around the clock. Whether that's jazz from Japan, pop from Paris, house from Hamburg, or soul from Seoul. It's all picked by our team and presented by our editors. So get lost in music with Monocle 24's playlist right here, day and night, on Monocle 24.
This is Section D with me, Tom Morris, where this week we are devoting the whole show to the gloriously glamorous design fest that is Design Miami. As our New York team was in Miami, they thought they might take a look beyond the fair and see what's being built in this global property hotspot. This is the region, after all, where everyone from Zaha Hadid to Norman Foster to Rem Koolhaas are currently creating condo towers. Hotel and Home South Beach is a vast Miami development due for completion in March 2015. Featuring 156 residences and 426 hotel rooms, with a prime location facing the sea, developers have tried to tap into the area's enviable surroundings. But what's it like working on projects like these where competition in the property market is so intense? Monocle's New York Bureau Chief Ed Stocker went along to the project preview during Design Miami.
Miami. South Beach, bringing it. There's nowhere in the US quite like Miami. While New Yorkers are fretting over the imminent arrival of snow, in the tropics of Florida it's still hot enough to go to the beach. The wealth and at times ostentation of Miami is visible, from the sports cars to the luxury yachts. Its manicured golf courses are there to lure the sizable flow of tourists escaping the winter cold. Holiday homes are one of Miami's main currencies, and South Beach one of the most coveted areas. Construction here never stops. Art Basel Miami Beach is the perfect time to preview a project, with plenty of out-of-towners scoping out a sunspot. One hotel and homes claims it offers something a little bit different. Here's New York-based developer Richard Lafrak speaking to me during the preview.
Well, the challenges of this particular property were interesting. We took an older building that had suffered from some neglect and some poor attempts at renovation in the past. But the building had 100% location. It was right in the center of South Beach, had 600 feet on the ocean, which is a rare thing. And the interesting idea was to translate it into something new, something exciting, something different. And we did that. We decided that we were going to embrace nature, embrace the beach, embrace sun, embrace light, and not just build another nightclub in South Beach that had some rooms on the top. And I think we've been successful at it. We've had a tremendous response now. People have seen the designs. They've seen the product is ready for market in just a couple of months. I like to say, you know, in some instances, the baby is better than the picture of the baby. And in this instance, by waiting to show people what we were going to do till just prior to completion, we're showing the baby instead of the picture of the baby.
True to Miami's Latin identity, a Brazilian designer, Deborah Aguiar, worked on the residences, while New Yorker Maya Davis focused on the hotel. Labusha Rose is project design director.
Deborah had this amazing Brazilian kind of aesthetic of repeating beams. And one of the things that she brings to the project, which is unparalleled with everybody else, is her sense of proportion. Everything she does is just a little overscale. You can look around this unit, that's a giant coffee table. But if you had something that was more a more typical piece of furniture, it wouldn't hold the room the way that this does. And she just effortlessly does that. So the corridor design that she created was using her elements of these repeating beams and trellises in the ceiling and all of that.
She agrees with Lafrak about the importance of the surrounding environment, something that stretches to the landscaping.
As the designs developed, we were really trying to be super respectful of what's around us and to highlight the natural environment in the planting that we're doing. For instance, landscaping is extremely important to this brand. We're bringing a lot of landscaping inside, and we were really trying to come up with something different on the outside. We started out wanting to do kind of a beach grassy zen, almost like the High Line in New York, because, you know, we're New Yorkers, so we're inspired by that. But we just felt like it would be a really beautiful aesthetic for Miami to do that on the landscaping around the building. It's interesting. Now I've been working on this for 2 years. I've learned a lot about local plants and what grows in shade and what grows in sun and how things develop. And the kind of the jungle environment that exists all over the beach, it's the most natural combination of plants. So we had to shift away slightly from the original concept, because sometimes you want to create a certain aesthetic look and then you develop and you learn that actually the most natural thing is to just embrace what actually happens here.
Little details seem important to the One Hotel and Homes developers. They may not have taken big risks, but they've certainly been prepared to push the boundaries, hiring Israeli-Colombian and Argentinian couple Yair Marcos Hammer and Paloma Tepa. The pair own Plant the Future, a company that brings greenery to homes and hotels through plant walls, terrariums, and even recycling old televisions as containers. Here's Yair Marcos Hammer.
In terms of projects, we like to connect with brands that are like-minded in their inspiration, in their connection with nature. For example, the One brand was a perfect fit for us, where we shared that value of inspiration from nature. Our work is 100% inspired by nature, where One, the hospitality product or real estate product, is also inspired by that. And we had a perfect fit where we were able to bring in the design, the art, into that hospitality product, where guests and visitors to the hotel and the property would be able to get inspired and understand nature in a different way. And that's the type of projects that we like most, that we feel are best for us. And we need that understanding from the brands. This is not for everybody. Not everybody understands that. Specifically, this project, the team was amazing. They understood. They let us go free. They let us fly. And that's something that has a lot of fun.
So perhaps when One Hotel and Home South Beach opens next year, residents and hotel goers may be content to sit and take in the view rather than heading out to party all night. There's always the chance, though, that they'll be doing both. For Monocle in Miami, I'm Ed Stocker.
You're listening to Monocle 24 with me, Tom Morris, where I'm bringing you Section D, our dedicated design show, which this week is bringing you some of the projects, products, personalities and previews to come out of the Design Miami Fair, which took place last week. Still to come on the show, we'll be charting the enduring modernist appeal of Brazilian contemporary furniture design at the Espaço showroom, examining the art and design interplay with the unveiling of a sculpture by Spanish artist Juan Plensa, all before meeting Seattle architecture firm Olson Kundig at Design Miami. Carlos Junguera specializes in bringing Brazilian design to New York, LA, and London through his Espaço showrooms. After an eight-year hiatus from Design Miami, Espaço returned to South Beach this year with a satellite exhibition in the minimal white penthouse of the Shore Club. Monocle's Megan Billings met the showroom owner at the exhibition to chat about what brought him back to Miami and how Brazilian design can always warm up a room, however stark.
The HFZ, who owns the Shore Club now, ask us if we want to do a satellite exhibition about Brazilian designers. And I found it interesting, so I look at the space and I think it would be a totally different and new and fresh way of showing what Espaço represents. So I decided to come.
And the space that we're in is the penthouse at the Shore Club. It reminds me a lot of your gallery in New York, or your showroom, I should say. I consider it a gallery in many ways, but it's all white. And the absolute beautiful pieces here really kind of speak for themselves and can shine. So tell me about how you kind of arranged it and decided what you would bring and set it up.
First, we decided the name of the exhibition called In Transito, which means in transit, which was an idea to show more the contemporary designers that Espaço represent, instead of the vintage, instead of the more modern pieces. So we approach more limited editions, more one-of-a-kind pieces by the young and new designers, not the new, but that Espaço represent. So we put together this collection, and that will be the next in 20 years from now, they will be vintage. So we want to be new and young this year. So that's what we decided. And, you know, each one design make the collection for the exhibition. So it's the first time we are showing in this country. The new pieces, limited edition, also some of the re-editions, the ones that I'm sitting. And we have the last chair that was designed by Sergio Rodriguez before he passed. And it's the first time we are showing here. So that's why we call it transit, because it's a transition between the past and the present, so we can show what's going on to today's design in Brazil.
And who are some of these younger emerging designers that you brought with you?
They're not emerging, but because they already established, this is a phase that I want to work with them. So they are all these new ideas, new pieces on their minds. They're designing, they're very excited about the whole movement of Brazilian design, so they decided to do this collection together. And the artists, those are my old artists, but with the new and fresh pieces, like Carlos Mota, like Claudia Moreira Sales, like Zanini, De Zanini, and Fernando Mendes, who also now is going to start showing him strong because he's phenomenal. And I think it's less, but good. So, you know, the concept of the exhibition is very minimalist. I want to show the furniture as pieces of art, which they are at the end of the day. And each one shows some character of each designer. So it's nice to introduce for collectors or for an audience that doesn't know them, so they can have an idea that what they bring on board for future reference on their collection.
It is really minimal, but it also feels very intimate in a way, even though it's very stark in here. I'm just kind of curious about what you have planned. I know that you do these kind of intimate events when you do Design Miami, or in New York you do that as well. And you're kind of at this nexus between South America and New York here in Miami. So what do you have planned while you're here?
I think there is a lot of connection between Miami and Brazil. So the idea to start showing here, it's probably good. The crowd in Miami, the people in Miami, has the ability to appreciate the design, the warmth of the each piece, you know. It's very connected to our culture. So although the pieces are in wood and sometimes in metal, and even Claudia's bench in concrete, show a little bit the warmth of Brazil and how our culture lives, our lives. You know, we are a very warm country. We love people. We love to be comfortable with people. So the idea to use materials in very strong way, but automatically the design makes them very cozy and very invited, and invite people to sit on it and have fun.
Do you have any favorite pieces that you brought with you?
All of them are my favorites. I love every piece, because although they talk to each other, if you put that in a group, they are very individual, they have their own personality. So it's very difficult for me, the way I am, to like one specific piece more than the other, or one specific person more than the other. I like people, I like what they design, and each one is, for me, is very, very excited to show them. So they're all my bests.
That was Monocle's Megan Billings speaking to Carlos Junguera at the exhibition of his New York showroom, Espasso, at Design Miami. This is Monocle 24, and you're listening to Section D, bringing you all of the fun of the design fair from Miami. Celebrated Spanish artist Juan Plenza unveiled his latest art installation, three resin figures set 10 metres high in Miami's historic Coconut Grove neighbourhood. The public installation, named The Poets of Bordeaux, sits by the residents of Park Grove, three brand new towers designed by architects OMA and Rem Koolhaas. Plenza sat down with our Megan Billings to talk about the work just before a dinner in his honour at the site.
The Poets is a piece that I did last year for a show in Bordeaux, in France. It's composed by three crouching figures on top of poles. And they have the capacity, a little bit from this pedestal, to look at us from above, a little bit like birds. And they have these three classic positions. One, it's with the hands in his mouth, the other in the ears, the other in the eyes. And, well, I'm trying to talk about that maybe sometimes eyes are not the right way to look at things, that words sometimes are not the best to talk about something, and our ears many times are not the best to listen the sounds, that we have to use other parts of our body. And it's an inner light working all the time, changing colors in a very gentle way, that it's a little bit about this kind of energy that all of us, we have inside ourselves, which is a kind of a silent conversation, let's say, with the others.
I'm very curious, when you're designing a public work, that's a design in public space, what exactly is going through your mind when you're making something that's so large and just really for the general public?
When I'm designing a piece that I know it will be installed, or it's a site-specific piece for a public space, I took a lot of consideration about the history of the site, what is the way to live of the community, the scale of this urban landscape or natural landscape, etc. In that case, in the piece that they write install over here, it's a piece that it was not a site-specific, but it's very beautiful, the concept, because it's a piece that I did for one of my exhibitions that becomes public thanks to the decision of others. That is also a very nice way to arrive to a public piece, because That means that somebody could believe that your work could be important for others, and he wants to share that piece with those others. And the piece becomes, in some ways, part of the community that people consider that it's important for them. And I think it's a beautiful way to transform something that was born as a personal work into public art.
This piece is in collaboration with this Rem Koolhaas building that's coming to Miami, the first one here. So what was the conversation like with Rem Koolhaas to do that?
You know, sometimes it takes a little time to know the answer. Honestly, I tell you that I have not an answer yet. Obviously, it's an honor for me to share that space with Koolhaas, which is a fantastic architect. I hope for him will be similar to share the space with me. But in any case, when art, it's beautiful, it's great, it's a good piece, and architecture too, they have so much in common that they will find links everywhere. I mean, I'm convinced that the piece will work very well with the building.
And we're in this really interesting part of Miami, so we're not in South Beach. This kind of south of downtown Miami, which is an established place, but also maybe having a rebirth in some ways. How do you think this piece is maybe going to live in this space in Miami?
Through all my career, that is the key point of my pieces. When a piece is working is when the piece really found its space. That means that people consider the piece part of the everyday landscape for them. And the piece becomes like a beacon, a reference for them. Said, okay, let's meet where the poets are, for example. If people could say that in 6 months or 1 year, the piece will be a successful project, you know. But we have to wait a little bit. People need a certain time to embrace a piece, because finally, they didn't ask about the piece. The piece suddenly appears one day in the middle of their everyday life. And I think that it's beautiful. It's the miracle of public art in a community. If I could really catch the feelings of that people to really embrace the piece as part of them.
That was Spanish artist Juan Plenza speaking to Monocle's Megan Billings as he unveils his new sculpture in Miami.
The Entrepreneurs is Monocle's weekly audio guide to the world's best business minds. From industry giants and family outfits to the one-man bands and clever upstarts.
We saw all this immense amount of frustration by young people finding their first jobs, their second jobs, internships. And we said it's ridiculous that in this day and age, with all the technology we have, we can't solve that.
Tune in at 1900 hours London time every Wednesday to hear insider tips, big challenges, and sparks of insight. We take an hour-long tour of the worlds of fashion to food, timepieces to tech, and hear the founding stories of some of the smartest names around.
That's The Entrepreneurs, premiering every Wednesday at 1900 hours London time, in association with Pictet.
Hello and welcome back to Section D with me, Tom Morris, with this very special show devoted to Design Miami. Misha Traxler are a Vienna-based duo who design everything from intuitive installations to intricate crockery. The pair attended Design Miami for the first time this year and were showcasing their Ephemera project, an interactive, sensor-based collaboration with Perrier Jouet, centred around the theme of Art Nouveau and drawing on nature. Monocle's New York bureau chief Ed Stocker went along to the fair to find out more.
Yeah, so if you go back, you start throwing again. And if you come close,
in a corner of Design Miami, there's a flurry of conversation. People are waving their hands at an installation, moving closer and further away from it. There is the occasional gasp as grown adults are transformed into kids in a sweet shop. The installation in question is called Ephemera, part of a larger collaboration between Austrian designers Misha Traxler and French brand Perrier Jouet, called Small Discoveries. Katerina Misha and Thomas Traxler explain as we look at their work at the South Beach Fair.
It's a room full of three objects, a rather large table and two mirrors, and they are, all three are kinetic, activated by the audience. And they are very floral, so actually they are very vivid. If people give it a bit of room to react, then they become very alive and all the floral elements on top of the table start moving and they start growing into three-dimensionality. And once people get too close, actually everything is hiding and the table becomes very flat.
All the species which we visualized are based on real species in nature. And a part of the species we decided to use for the elements are extinct already. Then a third is very common plants, which are also often overseen because they are everywhere. And then also a third of the species are newly discovered or rediscovered species. So we wanted to cover actually like all the influence humans can have on nature actually. So we can also preserve things and rediscover them.
There are around 60 different moving elements at the table, from ferns to mushrooms, all cut out of thin metal. So what's the message the pair are trying to put across?
So it's really about this joyful moment that you have to carefully respect. So it's both at the same time. It's very happy, but you have to be respectful to appreciate.
You have to back off a bit.
Yes, to appreciate it in the best way.
In this case, leaves and plants are key to the project. But nature has always been a theme close to the designer's heart. Indeed, one of their most renowned past projects, The Idea of a Tree, started in 2008, harnessed the sun's energy through solar panels to colour objects. The intensity of the pattern reflected the amount of sunlight. Another project, Reversed Volumes, used the imprints of fruit and vegetables to leave intricate patterns on plates and bowls. Technology is often present, admits Traxler, but it's by no means a prerequisite. The designers work on diverse projects. One of their most recent is an installation at an old people's home in their native Austria, due to open early next year. It's a prime example of their democratic approach.
The old people's home is just being opened for the inhabitants in January, so we haven't seen the reaction there. But we try to make pieces that people can relate to as well. So it's 2 yards and an entrance area, and the yards, actually, they're more light yards. So it's not meant that they go into the yards because they're not so big. I mean, they're rather big. They're like 15 by 15 meters, but they're not really open for them.
They're like internal courtyards.
Yes, mainly for light. And when we were asked by the artistic direction for the house and the architects to come up with an idea for that, we actually looked at what's already there. And they planned already a foreign garden and a pond, a water surface. And we thought that's actually super nice, but people in the upper floor, they will never actually see it. Because if you are immobile or you're in a wheelchair or you're rather old, it's super hard to bend down on a flat surface in order to see the yard downstairs. So we thought of a very simple project. We decided, okay, if they can't go to the garden and if they can't see the garden, we rather bring the gardens to them. So we attached a few strings and a few motors, and so it's 2 flying gardens that will come to the people.
Ephemera is labelled by Perrier Jouet as a modern twist on Art Nouveau, but something that seems to come very naturally. The drinks company has been involved in the art since the turn of the 20th century and boasts a collection of historic Art Nouveau pieces in its house in Epernay, France, the largest in private hands in the world. Axel de Buffevant is style director for the brand.
There's a very deep link between our wine style and Art Nouveau. So we thought, because Art Nouveau ethos is so interesting and so alive today, we wanted to commission young upcoming designers so that they would increase our collection with contemporary Art Nouveau. I think Design Miami is probably the best collector's design forum in the world ever. It was for us a great opportunity. The partnership with them is not only a champagne partnership, it's really about design. It's about our heritage, how to grow it for the future generations, and how to give a proper window of visibility to young upcoming designers. I mean, a real international one.
For now, we'll have to wait and see what the rest of small discoveries entails. One thing is for sure, its ability to question, provoke, and quite possibly make a bold statement.
That was Monocle's Ed Stocker speaking to Viennese design duo Misha Traxler at Design Miami. This is a Design Miami special edition of Section D with me, Tom Morris. Now, Seattle-based architecture firm Olson Kundig designed and curated the Collector's Lounge installation at this year's Design Miami. The firm's partners, Tom Kundig and Alan Maskin, spoke to Ed Stocker about the idea behind the new project, their take on Miami, and making the trip from America's northwest to its southeastern tip.
Tom, you've travelled quite a distance from Seattle, where you're based, to be here. How important is it to come to Design Miami and be here in Florida?
Well, first of all, it's terribly exciting for us to come from one corner of the country to another corner of the country. And it's a heck of an honor for us to be invited formally to this event. I mean, Design Miami has been now sort of building for 10 years. It's becoming more and more of an important venue for the design community. And we couldn't be more excited about being invited to participate in it.
And what's the aim of being here? Is it finding more clients? Is there a kudos attached to being part of Design Miami? What's the thinking behind becoming involved in a project?
You know, I really don't think that we're strategic in a sense that we're developing markets. But what we are trying to do is develop friends, connections, and these are worldwide connections at this point in Design Miami. We want to be part of that conversation. I mean, the conversation of the Northwest is, I think, an important conversation to carry on, not only to the Southeast, but internationally.
Your aesthetic, let's say, the type of houses, the type of buildings that you design, how well do you think that fits in with Miami? I guess it occasionally has a reputation of being a little flashy, let's say. How does that fit in with the sort of places you're designing?
Well, we may be talking about a yin to the yang of the Northwest to the Southeast, but that's the most exciting part about bringing all of these disparate philosophies, biases, or DNA together into one place. Because I've always felt that in order to really understand design at its root, you have to understand both extremes, and the way those two extremes kind of come together is the most exciting point.
And you think there's an extreme here?
I think so.
Tell me more.
Well, I think, you know, Miami is a culture that's been developing for a number of years. It's a particular landscape. It's a particular climate. It's got cultural influences that are really powerful coming out of South America and of course, the Caribbean, and also from the north. Obviously, there's a very strong influence from the upper northeast. And so where those two extremes kind of meet, there's bound to be something exciting happening, and that's Miami.
Well, we were talking and perhaps being ever so slightly mocking about the flashiness of Miami. I was interested to get your point of view on the other side to Miami, especially here in South Beach. There's some pretty incredible Art Deco architecture and some actually pretty incredible newly built cultural institutions.
Design at its root is solving a situation, you know, a functional situation, and it has stylistic implications. And what I think is fantastic about Miami is that it's developed its own sort of take on, you know, of course, the Art Deco era, and it has its own take, and it's wonderful. They're fantastic buildings. It was done by skilled architects and designers. And now currently, it's taking this culture, this climate, these sort of local expectations and making wonderful things out of them. That's what design really is about. It's not about a particular line of thinking or a particular style to solve the problems. It's about how do you solve it in a sort of in a beautiful, function-based way.
All right, well, Alan, I want to move on to you, and let's talk specifically about the installation that you've got here in Miami. So tell us a little bit about that.
When the four partners sat down, we meet every Monday and we're having a drink together, and we talked about what we wanted to do here. And we only started this project about 2.5 months ago. We wanted to go with a material that was consistent with the history of where we were from, the region in the Northwest, and that was Douglas fir trees. And so we started looking at historic imagery as inspiration and found these 100-year-old photographs of lumber yards in the Seattle area. What we discovered was the way that they would stack the lumber to dry it, and the way they literally would be stacked 40 or 50 feet tall was really intriguing and beautiful. And we wanted to actually work with the notion of stacking, and that became the concept. But the next step was we actually had to find the material. So we pulled in a frequent collaborator of ours. His name is Ted Hall, and he's from Spearhead, which is out in British Columbia. And he works with us on the fabrication of wood projects. And we said, we want to do a stacking piece. Can you find resources? Is there any material? And 3 months ago, a building in Los Angeles, a 1950s commercial building, was actually being demolished. And they had beams there that were 30 feet long, glue-laminated timber. They've been milled in Oregon. and the trees were from Northwest forests, you know, again in the 1950s. So we were able to bring this collection of glue lam beams to an installation at Design Miami that is all about collectors and collecting. And the reason that the piece is called 38 Beams is because we could only fit 38 beams on one truck, and we literally filled the whole truck. And so there were five steps that actually happened. So the trees grew in the Northwest. They were milled in Oregon. They were sent to Los Angeles, where they served for 64 years. They were demolished 3 months ago. We sent them up to TED to clean them up. And we experimented with stacking and with cantilevers to actually see how we could actually sort of block the spaces out. So they arrived here. However, when we're finished, we didn't want the material to go to waste. We wanted to almost give this material away to builders here in the Miami area, and we had no interest whatsoever, and we tried really hard.
Why do you think there was no interest?
I'm not sure. They ended up in the perfect place because they're going to the University of Kansas to a place called Studio 804. Architecture students design projects for the public, and many of them are low-income projects, and they design and fabricate them. It's a design-build studio. So their next iteration, which we loved, was that architecture students were going to be learning to cut their teeth on some really old, beautiful stock.
So you were overseeing the entire collector's lounge, and I understand you brought on board other people from the Northwest. So tell me a little bit about the other designers you collaborated with here.
We definitely wanted to bring along some other creative forces from our region, again, because I think we've been underrepresented in this area during Art Basel in the past. One of them is that we had a custom chandelier that was created by a light artist, an installation artist, Lilienthal Zamora. There's furniture in the exhibit, pieces from the Tom Kunde collection that's in there. Jim Olson has designed chairs. And then we had a design competition last year, and one of the youngest architects in our firm, her name is Jamie Slagle, she won, and she had designed something called the Jib Light. And it's this incredible wall-mounted light that can move 180 degrees, can be raised and lowered and used in almost any kind of living or commercial situation. And we fabricated the first three to bring here to Design Miami. So it really was this collective effort.
That was Monocle's Ed Stocker speaking to Tom Kundig and Alan Maskin of Seattle-based architecture practice Olson Kundig. And to end this Design Miami special edition of Section D, who better to hear from than the mayor of this successful fair's host city, Miami Beach. Local government has been a key driver in attracting global events such as this one to these shores. It seems that a concerted effort to invest in culture and the creative industries has resulted in a new, more grown-up, but nonetheless fun-focused brand for Miami. So let's end by hearing the glowing review Mayor Philip Levine has to give.
Miami Beach has transcended. It went from an area of retiree on fixed incomes to an area that was inundated with the Mariel boat lift, with crime. And it's come out to be one of the hottest destinations in the world. It's about fashion, it's about design, it's about quality of life. Of course, the tax advantages of the state of Florida have played a big role. And I always say that the great way to describe Miami Beach these days, I think, is a center for creative collaboration. And that's really what Miami Beach is. You see places that want to just overbuild and create and develop their way into being cool and hip, and that's just not how it happens. I believe it happens organically. You have a collaboration, various factors coming together at the same time. In our case in Miami Beach, it was a combination of our great weather, in combination with the fashion, the photography industry coming in, modeling, catalogs. Of course, as you mentioned, certain television shows like Miami Vice created this buzz. And I think it was a desire for a community that wanted to redevelop and reinvent themselves, and a government that was excited to do it. And a lot of things played into it. And then, of course, it continues to reinvent itself. Even today, it's very different than it was 10 years ago. Everyone thinks of South Beach, but it's not really just South Beach anymore. It's North Beach. And North Beach is an area that's rich in what we call MIMO architecture and design and style that depicts an era of time that is beautiful. It's a unique vision. And we have architects and developers coming in that are taking advantage of those historic buildings, renovating those buildings, because as you know, we have very strong historic preservation laws. One of the things we always say is you really can't know where you're going unless you understand where you've been. So we honor our past and we incorporate it into our future. So Miami Beach is not about just building bigger or greater. We're about quality, about innovation, and about lifestyle for people enveloped in the projects that we're allowing to happen in Miami Beach. Art Basel is more than just an art fair. It really is a wave. It brings in so many other types of people that come from all over the world to experience the art, the culture, the humanities. It's created great collections in Miami. We call it, as a phrase, it's getting sand in your shoes. You come to Miami Beach, you came for a painting maybe, you love what's going on here, and you end up buying a house or an apartment, and you can't get it out of your system. So we believe that what Art Basel has done is it's spread the Miami Beach energy around the world. Once you come to Miami and spend time in Miami, it never leaves you. Miami Beach stays with you forever. You can't buy this. You can't advertise this. You can't promote your way to this. You've got to have what it takes. And over the years, we've adapted to Basel, and Basel's adapted to us. And of course, what's happened is other shows have come from this. We don't want to be Vegas. We're not Orlando. We're not Atlanta. We're Miami Beach. We're boutique. We're unique. And we are Basel. The Maison Objet show is here, coming next year, which is very similar for furnishings and design. We're getting a high-end car auction shows for people that are connoisseurs of automobiles. We're getting the kind of shows that mirror Basel, but are in different sectors.
Every day, hundreds of families come to Greater Miami. Some come by streamlined train, and thousands come by automobile.
I think historically, you know, in the 40s and 50s, Miami Beach in the early 60s was the sun and fun capital of the world. Now we still are the sun and fun capital of the world. But now we're not just sun and fun. We're culture, we're art, we're lifestyle, we're restaurants, we're unbelievable places to live, we're yachting, we're everything together. And I think that Basel has projected that image worldwide and showed us the world what Miami Beach really is today. And Jackie Gleason's show in the 1960s came down, it was, you know, the sun and fun capital of the world. It still is, but we have a lot more than just that.
We'll be looking for you soon in Greater Miami, Dade County, the land where the sun reigns.
That was the mayor of Miami Beach, Philip Levine, bringing us to the end of this Design Miami special edition of Section D. Today's show is produced by David Pleasant and edited by Alex Funnell. You can contact the producer David at dmpandmonocle.com if you'd like to feature on the show or if you've got any comments or questions. I'm Tom Morris. And to play us out, we have that Miami resident and musical icon, Gloria Estefan, with Conga. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye. Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself anymore.